Live broadcasting here on CHLS 100.5 FM. My name is Jeff O'Kelly. This program is Snooze Button, and I'll be with you until 9 o'clock. We started this morning with music by George Frederick Handel. Very cheery. I just absolutely love that piece. An oboe sonata in F major, and we heard the first two movements of it, though really they're kind of one movement altogether. That was a recording with Neil Black on the oboe, Graham Sheen on the bassoon, and George Malcolm playing the harpsichord. We'll come back and hear the remaining movements of that sonata in a few minutes. Right now, though, I guess we better do weather and road reports. Make sure I'm on the right. Yes, this is Lillooet. Yesterday, the low was 5.0. The high made it up to 13.8. As of 7 a.m., the temperature sitting at 7 degrees. Environment Canada says rain ending this morning. We had a little bit. It was but very, very light. Rain ending this morning, then cloudy with a 40% chance of showers. Wind from the south at 30, gusting to 50, and a high today of 14. I shouldn't necessarily make assumptions about the rain. I haven't looked outside since I got to the studio, so who knows? It may change. Tonight, periods of rain, amounts of 20 millimeters over southern sections. Wind from the south at 30 kilometers per hour, gusting to 50 and becoming light near midnight, and a low tonight of 6 degrees. Tomorrow, periods of rain ending near noon, then cloudy with a 40% chance of showers, becoming partly cloudy early in the evening. Wind from the south at 30, gusting to 50 in the morning, then becoming light in the evening, and a high tomorrow of 12 degrees. Sunday, a mixture of sun and cloud, a low of plus 1, a high of 14. Monday, a mixture of sun and cloud with a 40% chance of showers, a low of 5 and a high of 14. And Tuesday, cloudy with a 40% chance of showers, a low of plus 4 and a high of 13. So a little bit damp possibly over the next few days, though not exceptionally so, and not quite as sunny, but temperatures staying pretty comfortable. Taking a look at conditions across the country and around the province. Let's start in Charlottetown, PEI, minus 6 degrees, mainly sunny there. Montreal is mostly cloudy and minus 3. Toronto, plus 1 and partly cloudy. Excuse me. Iqaluit, partly cloudy and minus 20. They've dropped back down. Kind of a shame for them. They were enjoying some warmer temperatures earlier in the week. Winnipeg is minus 6 and mostly cloudy. Saskatoon has light snow at minus 4 degrees. Yellowknife, minus 28 degrees and mainly sunny. Edmonton is cloudy and minus 4. Calgary, minus 1 and misty. Whitehorse, mostly cloudy and minus 2. Prince George, plus 1 and there is fog. And let's see, a little closer to home. Clinton, cloudy and plus 3. Hope, plus 8 and mostly cloudy. Kamloops, 6 degrees and mostly cloudy. Also 6 degrees in Pemberton, and Vancouver is 9 degrees and has light rain. Not too much on the highways. There's a big note now on the Drive BC website regarding the Rockfall area. That's 11 kilometers, 11 and a half kilometers west of Boston Bar on Highway 1 at the Ferriby Wall. I'll just read you the whole thing. The highway is currently open. However, the Ministry of Transportation is actively monitoring this area for the potential of falling rock. A rockfall warning is in place, and the highway may be closed without advance notice to ensure the safety of motorists. And that's all that matters really here. For the most recent information, just check drivebc.ca. Further notes here on Highway 1, road erosion on Highway 1 at the Hell's Gate Air Tram. The highway is open to two lanes of traffic there, and the road has been narrowed. Each lane now 3.7 meters wide. A 60-kilometer speed limit is in effect. And let's see, I think there's just one more for Highway 99 South. Just be aware of the fact that there is a fair amount of wildlife on the road in the Pemberton area. Use caution, slow down, watch out. They don't specify what variety of wildlife, but in the absence of any information, I would assume, I think it would be wise to assume that it's wildlife that could do damage to your car. I don't think they're just talking about birds in the road or something like that. So that took care of weather and roads. All right, we're done. Let's go back to this sonata by George Frideric Handel. He sort of defies expectations slightly in this sonata by putting it in five movements. Although, as I said, the first two movements, which we already heard, they sort of run together in that the first one ends on a half cadence, and that leads directly into the second one. So taken that way, it can be seen as sort of a mini, very mini overture of about 3 minutes duration that we heard. And then a slow movement, and then a pair of dances to conclude. So we have left the slow movement, which is very beautiful, and then a lively, fun bourrée, and a very charming and not too stately minuet to finish things off. Handel put a great deal of care into the writing of his sonatas for solo instruments, and in the first two movements that we heard already, if you were paying close attention, you may have noticed that the bassoon had a lot to do. Now, this is specifically an oboe sonata, and normally, particularly if you looked at, say, a sonata from the Italian, from Italy at around the same time, normally, you would have the principal instrument. In Italy, it was often the violin, but not necessarily. So let's go with the oboe in this case. The oboe would have it would be carrying all of the thematic material, and the harpsichord and any other accompanying instrument, in this case a bassoon, would just be doing that, accompanying, playing the bass line and filling in some chords. Here, Handel has put a great deal of work into the music so that the bass line becomes almost a counter melody. It's almost, if not as important as the principal oboe part. And so the two instruments are working very much in counterpoint in those first two movements. And that's just something that was a little bit extraordinary for the time. Not all composers took the care and trouble to make the music that interesting. Anyway, let's hear the remaining three movements of this sonata. We'll hear once again Neil Black on the oboe, Graham Sheen on bassoon, and George Malcolm on harpsichord. Thank you. Music by George Frideric Handel. We have been listening to the Oboe Sonata in F Major, HWV number 363A. I don't know why, I just find the cataloging numbers for composers to be amusing. And as the years go by, either it is that I'm just discovering that there are far more of these kinds of catalog numbers for various composers, or I think more likely more cataloging is being done. I've said this before, that I think one of the probably easiest, or to maybe not easiest, one of the least interesting ways that somebody can earn a post-bachelor type degree in music is to be the originator or founder of a catalog numbering system for a particular composer. So that may be one reason we're seeing so many more of them. Anyway, I just think that's a fantastic oboe sonata. I love these woodwind sonatas by Handel. I've got lots more, more for flute, a few more for oboe, some for recorder, which we haven't even dipped into yet, and I think I've got a few that are for violin as well. That was a recording featuring Neil Black on the oboe, Graham Sheen on bassoon, and George Malcolm on harpsichord. It is 8:18. Let me tell you what's coming up today on Radio Lillooet, and I'll give you the weekend as well. When Snoozebutton wraps up, leave you with music from the Folk World Reggae playlist around 10 o'clock. I'll switch things up to Studio One in Lillooet Secondary School, and you can hear student broadcaster Raynell. She's on the air Monday through Friday from roughly 10:15 to 12:15. Then it's back down to Studio 2, more Folk World Reggae, and at 2 o'clock, Democracy Now! In its new Friday time slot. That's the only day of the week it's in at that slot, and it should be remaining there at least until the end of, well, I'm not sure how long. It's just going to remain there for right now. Let's see, the Six Mix with Lyle LaRochelle. Lyle will be returning to the airwaves tonight at 6 o'clock, so we're really glad to welcome him back. And then at 8 o'clock, I don't know if Sheila is able to make it, but the collection with host Sheila Simpson. Don't forget Saturdays, the Andrew Twisty Family Hour. That is live from 9 until 10. And on Sunday mornings, you can hear classical music without me talking about it between roughly 5 a.m. and 9 a.m. Then later on Sundays at 12 noon, it's Fusion Cafe with Jason McLeod. And more jazz fusion music after that on Sundays. You can find all of that information on the Radio Lillooet website, which is radiolillooet.ca, and you'll find many shows posted there in podcast form and interviews and pictures and all sorts of other things. Okay, let's move on, and we're going to turn to music by Louis Spohr. I don't have his dates in front of me. I really should call him Ludwig Spohr, but for some reason Louis has stuck. He was German by birth. Born in the 1780s, if I recall correctly, probably around 1784, and I think he died in the 1850s. So born in 1784, that makes him about 14 years younger than Beethoven, just to give you an idea and put him into sort of a chronological context there. And that fits perfectly with his music, because he is one of those composers who was sort of, I don't know if managing is the right word, but who was working during the transition from the classical period to the Romantic era. He's a considered to be a sort of a transitional composer. Spohr was very famous in his lifetime. His music was extremely popular, and he was a very, very talented musician, extremely good violinist as well as composer. But after his death, his music seems to have fallen into not ill repute, but just kind of was forgotten about. And later, probably starting around 1960 or 1970, there began to be something of a revival of Spohr on recordings. Still don't hear his works performed live very often, but a fair chunk of his music has now been recorded, including his four clarinet concertos, which are some of his more popular works, and really are very neat pieces. I'll play one of them some morning. He wrote something like 36 or 39 string quartets, one of the most prolific string quartet writers of his era. And most of those have been recorded, and symphonies, and a few of his oratorios, and maybe one or two of his operas. He wrote quite a bit, and in just about all genres as well. I don't think there's a lot of piano music by him, but I'm pretty sure there is some. Anyway, Spohr was married. He had two wives, not at the same time, successively. His first wife, I can't recall her name, she was a pianist and a harpist, and it seems to have been a very happy marriage. Unfortunately, she died much too soon, and then later on in life he married again, and I don't know, have any information about how that marriage went. But since Spohr himself was a violinist and his wife was a harpist and pianist, he wrote a fair amount of music involving those instruments. What we're going to hear is the first movement of a sonata concertante that he originally wrote for violin and piano, which was probably for him and his wife. However, in looking at the score for the piece yesterday, my impression is that he was probably writing the piano part in such a way that it could be fairly easily transferred to the harp. It certainly had that look about it. So in their lifetimes, he and his wife may have performed it that way as a work for violin and harp. We're actually going to hear it one further step removed from that, and I'm not sure if this is Spohr's own arrangement or someone else's, but again, it would be a fairly logical step to take, at least in Spohr's time. So here the violin has been replaced by a flute, and so you've got flute and harp, and it works. They work quite well together. Now, I said that he was a transitional composer leading from the classical period to the Romantic era. That said, you're not going to hear much in this movement that is at all romantic sounding. It really sounds very much as if it could have been written by Mozart, and maybe even Mozart on a slightly off day. I only say that because the piece is not that harmonically complex. It's very charming, attractive, engaging, all of those kinds of things, but it's not the kind of music that's going to make you go, wow, I can't believe he just did that. Maybe that's exactly what some people are looking for. Who knows? Anyway, let's listen to this recording with Robert Aitken on the flute and Erica Goodman on the harp. Thank you. That was music by Louis or Ludwig Spohr, whichever you prefer. We've been hearing the first movement that comes from his Sonata Concertante, music he wrote for violin and piano, but we heard it played there on flute and harp, and it works quite well for those two instruments. Robert Aitken on the flute, Erica Goodman playing the harp. It is 8:33, so we better do some public service announcements, and I've got a mess in front of me, but I'll sort it out as best as I can. Let's start with the pool schedule for today. Let's see. Aquafit will be running from 9 until 10 a.m. Everyone welcome, 10:30 to 11:30. Lane swimming, 11:30 until 1. And Freak Out Friday, everyone welcome. That's tonight, 5:30 until 8 p.m. Let's see, it's also everyone welcome swim tomorrow from noon until 4. And then, of course, on the new schedule, the pool is closed on Sundays. And don't forget, also closed on Mondays. Coming tomorrow night is the next concert in Lillooet Music's 2014-2015 concert season. The Sweet Lowdown, they are a group that comes from Victoria who blend original songwriting and three-part harmonies with an old-time instrumental groove. That will be at 7:30 p.m. tomorrow night at St. Andrew's and St. Mary's Church. And tickets, if they are still available. $20 if you get them today or during the day tomorrow. Otherwise, $22 at the door for adults, $5 for students. Tickets are available from PharmaSave, KC Health, and IDA. And if you want a little preview of the Sweet Lowdown, tune in tomorrow afternoon around 3:30 or so here on Radio Lillooet. I will be talking to some members of the band. Let's see, what else have we got here? Lillooet Learns has its annual general meeting coming Tuesday, March the 24th. That is at noon at the Learning Center, number 76 Fifth Avenue. Lunch will be served. The Tsquilax First Nation has issued a notice of nominations and elections of land committee, but I've got the wrong dates in front of me. Nominations, March 28th, 1 until 2 p.m. in the basement of the band office. And then the election will be April the 26th from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. in the basement of the band office. Yeah, I said I was going to make a mess of these. I have now. They're in no order whatsoever. The annual diabetes-friendly gathering called Pot of Greens Rainbow of Foods, that is coming next week, hosted at the Hacklip Hall and sponsored by Hoyston Tlitkat Sekulwas. I'm so bad at saying that name. And Squilow. And they will be having a diabetes workshop, snacks and lunch provided, and there will be entertainment, all sorts of other fun things going on, and various workshops and presentations for developing health. The Lillooet Community Banner Project is going on now. I'm not going to go into any great detail about this. You can find all the details in this week's Bridge River Lillooet News. Just want to point out that the entries are due by April the 8th. So not a lot of time left for that. And you can pick up the package, the entry package, at the rec center, the municipal office, or you can get it online, it says. However, I did look online on the website, and I wasn't able to track it down there. But maybe I was just looking in the wrong place. Anyway, check this week's Bridge River Lillooet News for more information about that. The standard first aid and CPRC Red Cross first aid course that is scheduled for the rec center here April 18th and 19th from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. cost $150 per person. It is a two-day course, requires complete 100% attendance and a 75% minimum passing grade on the written exam in order to receive your certification. Let's see, registration deadline, April the 7th. When I talked to the rec center earlier this week, they had almost enough people to run the class. I think they need six people, minimum of six, to run the class, and they were getting close. But if you want more information about that, get in touch with the rec center at 250-256-7484, or you can email them rec@lillooetbc.ca. And I already did that one. So, okay, we're done. What are we at? 8:38. We're going to turn to Rachmaninoff now and hear something that's actually big and scary sounding. No, it's not. Hopefully not that scary. We're going to listen to the last movement of his symphonic dances. This is music from 1940. The last work. I want to say the last major work, but I seem to recall it's actually the last music that Rachmaninoff ever wrote. He died a few years later in 1943. This is a big three-movement work for orchestra, almost equivalent to a symphony, but not quite. It is in scale. It's just not structured like a symphony. There's some hints that Rachmaninoff may have been thinking of the use of this music for ballet, but not necessarily writing it as a ballet when he wrote it. He essentially concurrently wrote the piece both as a work for two pianos and as an orchestral score. And many people, those who are particularly Rachmaninoff scholars, consider this to be one of his absolute masterpieces. It's kind of a summing up in many ways for him, and in the course of the work, he quotes various other pieces from earlier in his career. Not so much the pieces you'll know well, nothing from the piano concertos or anything like that. There are some themes from the First Symphony that come up several times, and also from his choral masterpiece, The All-Night Vigil. The third movement is sort of a struggle between music that's based on a Latin plain chant known as the Dies Irae, Day of Wrath, if I recall correctly, and that is a chant that is specifically associated with the Requiem for the Dead. And so it's a struggle between that Dies Irae, a theme that Rachmaninoff turned to over and over in his career, and also between a bit of a Russian Orthodox chant, which is set to the words, Glory be to God. And so these two lighter and dark forces are at struggle with one another throughout the piece. Ultimately, the Glory be to God stuff does win, but it's a close call, definitely. Music gets extraordinarily exciting in its latter stages, and if you're the kind of person that likes to tap your foot to a tune, you will be able to tap your foot to the beat, but if you try and tap it to the tune near the end, you will get terribly confused. Anyway, I think it's a really neat piece. Now, I just want to give you a word of warning about this recording. When I listened to it at home, it had kind of a shattery quality in some of the louder passages. I'm hoping that won't be the case here. I was actually listening to it on my computer speakers at the time. So hopefully it was just because the speakers were too small to handle the stuff that's coming out. But if there is that shattery quality, I apologize. And I'll try and avoid the volume being too excessive. This is a recording with the State Symphony of the Russian Federation. They were never very good at naming orchestras. And the conductor is Yevgeny Svetlanov. Music by Sergei Rachmaninoff. We've been listening to the final movement that comes from the Symphonic Dances, probably a little more of the demonic side of Rachmaninoff, not nearly as much the lush romanticist that we know from earlier in his career. And a shame about the gong. There's a gong stroke on the very final note of that piece. And most recordings kind of play it up. For some reason, this recording did not, but otherwise I really like the way they play. That was the State Symphony of the Russian Federation with Yevgeny Svetlanov conducting. It is 8:56. Maybe that music was too much for you. Got something soothing here to finish off with. We're going to turn to Hans Christian Lumbye. And I do not have his dates in front of me. Composer in the 19th century and I believe in the latter half of the 19th century. He was Danish by birth, and he is known as the Johann Strauss of the North. Great composer of waltzes and polkas and things like that, much along the lines of Johann Strauss's. And they could probably very easily be mistaken for some of the music of Johann Strauss. We're going to hear one of his waltzes. This is called Hesperus, and for those of you curious about the name, Hesperus was a figure in Greek mythology. He was one of the sons of Eos, who was the goddess of dawn, known in Roman mythology as Aurora. Anyway, Hesperus was associated with the evening star, which of course is a name that was once given and still used sometimes, given to the planet Venus. And he had a half-brother whose name was Phosphorus. You're seeing some word roots here. Phosphorus was associated with the morning star. And it's kind of ironic because the evening star and the morning star are both the same thing. Anyway, this particular waltz has starts with an introduction, which is about almost a quarter of the length of the waltz. And it's really quite dreamy and a little bit more extended than these things usually are. And then the main waltz itself is, again, a little on the subdued side, but very lovely. And I think suggesting those sort of evening sunset type qualities to it that one would associate with seeing the planet Venus. We'll listen to an orchestra here who I believe must be Danish, since they are calling themselves the Tivoli Orchestra, though their conductor's name seems to be Hungarian, Tamás Veto. And I apologize to all Hungarians. It's spelled V-E-T-O with an umlaut, or the double dots over top of the O. I don't know quite what to make of that. Anyway, here they are with music by Hans Christian Lumbye. I think you'll like this. That was music by Hans Christian Lumbye, a Danish composer, a.k.a. the Strauss of the North. And we've been listening to a waltz called Hesperus, a recording there with the Tivoli Orchestra conducted by Tamás Vito. I'll just go with Vito. It's a lot easier to say. At some point, I will learn better, and then I will correct my pronunciation. But it won't be today, I'm afraid. That's it for today's show.